But the reason I wrote the book, though, is because I'm a professor and we were doing research on like basic decision-making research on how people try to change things from how they are to how they want them to be. When we're presented with a situation, our first thought is, hey, what can we add? Mm-hmm. And then the problem is we add and move on without even considering this whole other class of options, right? Why is minimalism a counterintuitive thing as opposed to just like this isn't that the default way to be, right? We have 250,000, at least a quarter million objects in our house. And each one of those objects is something that we're thinking about shuffling around.
Why do we instinctively add more, but rarely consider taking things away? In this episode, Lydie Clouts joins us to explore the hidden power of subtraction and why our brains are wired to overlook it. Drawing from his book, Subtract, The Untapped Science of Less, Lydie explains how this instinct to add can lead to unnecessary complexity, missed opportunities, and burnout. But this conversation goes far beyond minimalism. It's about rethinking how we approach challenges and choices in every area of life. We also dive into practical ways to shift our mindset and discover Lydie's unexpected path to becoming a behavioral science expert. If you've ever felt buried under the weight of more, this episode will open your eyes to the liberating potential of less. But before we get there, I want to quickly thank today's sponsors. If any of them pique your interest, be sure to check them out. But as I always say, if you don't need it, then it's not a good deal. And then lastly, if you have yet to leave a rating and review for the podcast, pause the episode. It takes 30 seconds or less. This is the best way to help the podcast continue to succeed and grow and reach new listeners that may not have considered how carving away what's superfluous and what's unnecessary in their life will create a more intentional, well-oiled life. So thank you in advance to those of you that have done that already. And thank you for those of you who choose to do that today. Again, huge help. And with that, let's get into this conversation with Lydie. So I was actually at the library and I saw your book, Subtract, The Untapped Science of Less. And I was like, oh, this is right up my alley, especially with what I was doing with minimalist moms. But in really looking to cultivate a life of intentional living, I think we so often don't prioritize less, we prioritize more. So I was happy to see this on the shelf.
Yeah, that's awesome that it was in the library too.
Yeah.
Makes my day. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've seen it in multiple libraries at this point. So that's always exciting.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So let's get into your book. What made you desire to write this? What was the motivating factor here?
Well, I mean, like you, I've always been interested in kind of how do you streamline things in your own life? And I think probably had like a disposition towards, you know, it seems like we're missing some of these opportunities to where happiness or fulfillment or whatever it is could come from, you know, stripping things away. But the reason I wrote the book, though, is because I'm a professor and we were doing research on, you know, like basic decision-making research on how people try to change things from how they are to how they want them to be. And the results of that research were just so compelling that I had to write the book at that moment. Yeah.
Absolutely. Just here on a personal note, what has that research done in your personal life in regards to subtraction?
It's weird because you think, oh, it couldn't change how you think about this, but of course it has. I mean, it's like it's so spending, I don't know what it was. I mean, probably altogether like 10,000 hours at least on the research and the writing and the thinking about it certainly changes how you approach your life. I think I'm more aware of things that could be removed. I would say that the areas that I was probably pretty focused on before doing the research were kind of streamlining your time and your physical things. But then it really helped me think about like ideas, right? Because as a professor and as somebody who just loves ideas and loves reading, and yeah, that's just the best. And figuring out like, okay, how do you revisit those, right? How do you revisit those and subtract the ones that are no longer serving you well or have been proven wrong based on, you know, new things that you've learned. So I think it's made me more kind of cognizant of that and, you know, trying to build that into my process of creating and sharing knowledge, which is what my job is. So.
I don't know if we've really defined or stated what your thesis is, what that actually looks like, what we mean by subtracting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great story that, you know, ties into kids and people have been like, oh, that's a great apocryphal story. And I said, I had to look up what apocryphal means. And it's like, no, it's not apocryphal. It's true. So I was playing Legos with my son, Ezra, who was 3 at the time. And we were basically making a Lego bridge. And the problem we had was just that one of the support columns was shorter than the other support column, right? So I turned around behind me to grab a block to add to the shorter column to make this level bridge. And by the time I had turned around with the block, he had removed a block from the longer column, right? So like right there in front of my eyes was this tendency that we then studied to death, basically, that when we're presented with a situation, in this case, it was a bridge, but it also applies to your schedule or your mental models. When we're presented with a situation, our first thought is, hey, what can we add? Mm-hmm. And then the problem is we add and move on without even considering this whole other class of options, right? It's not necessarily a problem that, oh, we think of something first. That's how our brains work about a lot of things, but it is a problem if we kind of don't even think about a whole class of options that could be making our lives better. So that's kind of the thesis. And again, it's a very simple model with a Lego bridge, but it is, you know, helpful as an anecdote because what we're doing is trying, in so much of our life, is trying to build those bridges, right? We're trying to take our schedule and make it so that it actually meets the needs of our kids and our partner. And we're trying to have ideas and put them out there into the world in a way that makes sense to the audience, right? And if all we're doing is thinking about, okay, what can we add to these to make them better? We're missing out.
Mm-hmm. That's curious. How old was your son when he noticed that?
3. But, okay. And I mean, it's so funny because, the story is just, he's not a good subtractor. He wasn't a good subtractor when he was 3. It's just like he played a lot of Legos. And this was the one random case where I think he thought to take away. And there's also like an element of laziness involved where he didn't want to like reach for another block. So he just took one away. So people are like, oh yeah, so kids are better subtractors. Like, no, he has like a million Legos in our house. He's a horrible subtractor. Yeah, but okay. He was 3 at the time.
Okay. Well, no, because, I need to figure out how to ask this. So just go with me here. I don't think it's a nature versus nurture thing. I do wonder if it's a cultural thing of us considering, let's consider what we add before we consider what to subtract. But I do think it's because we can obtain more now as a society. Do you see where I'm going with this question?
No, it's great. So yeah, I'll take the two parts. So nature versus nurture. Certainly, I mean, you know, as researchers, we tried to boil it down to like, okay, is this something that is just happening in the cognitive process of like, do we even think of this as an option, right? But of course, any decision that gets made in the real world has, you know, two basic parts, which is like, you have to think of it, and then you have to decide to do it, right? And so we were, you know, the thing that we are less likely to do that we found in our research that was new is that we're less likely to think of it. And that's powerful. And it shows also that there's probably some kind of nature piece to it, that it's not all just what we've learned to do with Legos, but certainly like our nurture is pushing us in that direction too. When you have a dad who buys you a new Lego set every time you finish your last one, that's, you know, kind of encouraging adding. And you're exactly right. We have the constraints that may have been there are oftentimes gone for those of us who are fortunate enough to live the lifestyle that I do, at least. Culturally, I think you're exactly right. There are differences across cultures. We looked in our studies if there were differences in thinking about it across cultures and didn't find any, but we did. It wasn't like that wasn't the purpose of our study. So I think there's still more that can be done there. There was just actually a recent replication that came out of people in France, and they found the same thing. So French people and US people do it. But I do think, you know, where the cultural difference could show up is when, you know, you have, again, there's two steps, right? You have to think about it and then you have to choose it, right? And so if you're living in this American society where it's conspicuous consumption and, you know, consumerism, or all your neighbor's kids have all the Legos, then that can kind of make you less likely to choose subtraction as a way to make things better. Whereas if you're living in a society where there's kind of more minimalism and or more examples around, or just a family that encourages that, then I think you're probably the choosing part makes subtraction more likely. Does that make sense? I know it was
I was just, I didn't know how to articulate it in the best way, but I do think there is this cultural desire just to obtain more. I mean, you wrote in your book, our homes contain a quarter of a million objects. It represents a lot of our time that is only getting scarcer. So it's like we want all this stuff, and yet it ends up taking away from the things that matter most. So I do feel like we're aligned in the minimalism regard. Curious to know what your thoughts are on minimalism and how that plays into subtraction.
Yeah, I think that's totally related. And I guess there's two, you know, conceptually, right, you can be a minimalist just without adding stuff, right? And I think, you know, that's fine. But there's this whole other kind of way of being, which is just like not adding or not doing as much. But I think, you know, the reality of being a minimalist in our society now is that it does have to have some subtraction, right? You have to say, okay, here's what I have, and here's what I need to take away to reach minimalism. So I think there's a ton of overlap. And I mean, obviously, like Marie Kondo, I talk about her in the book, and you know, the idea of sparking joy from taking things away, right? And I think there's something there. You know, the framing of my book obviously is, you know, this is something that can make things better, right? This is not subtracting to make things more efficient or because we need to cut the budget or whatever. It's like, no, we're trying to make things better, and subtracting is a way to do it. And I think, you know, minimalism is probably a pretty good example of that. I mean, people aren't being minimalist to sacrifice usually ever, I guess. It's like, this is a lifestyle choice. We think our life is going to be better if we do this. Kondo kind of embodies that just in the tidying part of minimalism, yeah. Which is, does this spark joy? And if it doesn't, then it goes out. So I think that that's where there's some really strong alignment. And again, there's, you know, it's not like these ideas are out there, right? Maybe what's useful about my research and our research is showing that this is, why does it seem counterintuitive? Why is minimalism a counterintuitive thing as opposed to just like, this isn't the, why isn't that the default way to be, right?
No, that was interesting, because it is, I guess, what did you learn, or what did you see that made it harder for people to consider subtraction first and foremost? Like, why is that so hard for people, I guess?
It's just the way our brain works. And I think if you think about, okay, well, why would our brain work in a certain way, right? Then you go to these biological reasons, right? The nature, and you think about, we have this desire to accumulate food, right? That's been helpful in passing down our genes. There's also another one that's, I think, kind of was more surprising to me to find out about, but also I think probably more relevant when I look at the reasons that I add in my day-to-day life, which is just this desire to display competence. And so the example I use in the book is bowerbirds. So these are the famous birds that build ceremonial nests, and the male bowerbirds build these really ornate nests and decorate them. And then the female bowerbirds go around and look at the nests and decide which male to mate with based on which nest they like the best. So it all makes sense so far. But then the female bowerbird goes and builds a nest to raise and shelter the young, right? So the whole point of that first nest is just to show that this bird that built it can move sticks around in the world, right? They can effectively interact with their surroundings. And this is something that applies to birds of both genders, but also humans. And it applies not just to moving physical things around in the world, it also applies to task completions. It's like one of the most robust ideas in psychology. So, you know, we have this desire to display competence. And when we add something, there's evidence of our competence right there in the world. When we take something away, you effectively interacted with the world, but there's not evidence of it. And so I think that's probably a big reason that this is harder to think of. It also makes it harder to follow through with, right? We talk about, okay, how do you go from thinking about it to then choosing it? And if you're in a organization, for example, right? Or even if you're just, you know, you're just a parent, right? If you take something away to make it better for your kids, that no other parent sees that you've done that, right? And you could look like you're slacking off. And it's like, no, it's not that I'm slacking off. It's just that I don't want them to have another activity in the afternoon. This is like intentional playtime, is a very deliberate choice. I had to take something away to do this, but there's not evidence to show other people that you've done that. So it becomes harder to display competence by subtracting. And I think, you know, I'll keep going because then the next question is like, it's not that you can't show competence through subtracting, right? And that's where I think things mm-hmm. like minimalism are helpful, right? Because, yeah. Okay, maybe people don't notice it, but when you put a name on it, like minimalism, then it's like, okay, Diane's trying to do this, right? This is intentional. And then nobody says, oh, you couldn't think of it, or you are being a bad parent. It's like, no, this is my approach, and this is why I think it's going to be better.
I'm curious to know the practical application of your book. I like that you talk about, we have this long list of to-dos, but we need a list of stop doings. So what would that mm-hmm. look like for someone to actually implement?
I think it's just building it into, that's an example of building it into your routine, right? So if you every week you come up with a to-do list and just say, okay, while I'm doing that, how can I think of things to stop doing, right? So again, back to the fundamental problem, we've got this whole class of options that we don't think about. So when you're thinking about how to make things better, how can you give yourself cues or force yourself to think about what you could stop doing? I mean, maybe it's when it's like trying to get your kids to try new foods, right? It's like, okay, we're going to get them to try three new foods this week. It's like, well, what are the three foods that you're going to take out this week so that there's space for the three new foods, right? Or activities. Oh, try a new sport. Okay, great. What's going to give there? So basically you're forcing yourself to think about the subtractions at the same time as the additions. And I think, you know, even things like AI can actually be really helpful with that. That obviously didn't exist in the form that it does now when I wrote the book, but I think it's actually pretty good at providing those suggestions, but you have to ask it. It's really good at, you know, hey, that's great. How can I, how could I write this in 50 words instead of 100? So,
yeah. When you were gathering research for this book, were you mostly focused on the United States or were you looking at worldwide data?
Our research data came from U.S. participants for the most part. We did intentionally go look. We got a sample from Germany and a sample from Japan, but they were small. They were more to just see if there were any big differences. And what we found there were that the variation between the U.S. and German population or the U.S. and Japanese population, that variation was smaller than the variation within mm-hmm. populations. But
okay, just curious about that.
I think what we really need to do is find like an undeveloped population, right? Or even like a population that hasn't been brought up on language and written language anyway. But yeah,
absolutely. All right, just a few more things. What does it look like? Maybe encouragement for parents here. How can subtraction in parenting and home life be a benefit to us?
Yeah, there's so many benefits, but to try to answer it most simply, it's like it goes back to that time, right? And it's mm-hmm. like you pulled out that great point about, you know, we have 250,000, at least a quarter million objects in our house. And each one of those objects is something that we're thinking about shuffling around. Like you have to remember where it is. So it's like
inventory. It's inventory to manage.
And so you've got this limited amount of time that we have, and it's even more limited when it comes to kids, right? Because like they're only gonna be a 3-year-old for 1 year and that's it. So that's the main way I think that it helps. Anything that you subtract is just giving you more of that time with the kids and giving time and attention too, right? It's because again, if you're that inventory that you're thinking about is not thinking about, oh, it's cool that my 3-year-old just did this neat thing with Legos or something mm-hmm. else. So
mm-hmm. how do you say it? Lao Tzu?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I really appreciated that you included his quote, "To attain knowledge, add things every day. To attain wisdom, subtract things every day." And I would say that that is the main takeaway that I'm taking from your book. I know that's his quote, but I'm like,
no, that's okay.
you have gathered the wisdom for me, and now I can apply this to my life and gain my own insight. But yeah, I do think that it is just a reframing of, I don't know, what we think success looks like, both professionally, personally, like in our homes. Again, it's just consumption. To me, I'm like trying to be anti-consumerism, even with this new podcast venture. It's like the main idea is to just cultivate a life that matters, get rid of what's superfluous. And it's not our first instinct to do that.
Yeah, no, that's really nice. And I think, you know, the same way that there's just an abundance of information now too, right? So that the quote becomes even more important.
That is something that I've had to notice about my personal life of subtraction is there's so much noise. There's so many voices we can be taking in. And it's like, no, to gain wisdom is to really narrow that down and just sit with it. And it doesn't mean you can't bring in other voices throughout your life. But so often we're just moving through and we're never really, I always say you never really like implement what you've learned. You never sit with it. Right. It's just gathering all of that. So I'm like, no, I need to subtract. I need to not listen to as many podcasts. I need to not take in as many teachers.
Yeah, no, it's hard. I mean, you've got to filter what's coming in, right? And then you've got to actually, like you said, set time aside to sit with it and to, you know, I think like revisit your beliefs, right? Which requires kind of understanding what those beliefs and values are. Because one of the things that we tend to do when we get new information, and this is one of my favorite stories from the book. So one of the things that we tend to do is when we are confronted with new information, instead of getting rid of I'll give the story first. So when Ezra, this is another Lego story, he got Legos for Christmas from Santa Claus. And, you know, he was like 5 or 6 at the time. And he said, "How did Santa give me Legos?" I said, "Well, you asked Santa for Legos. Of course he gave you Legos." And he's like, "Yeah, but I thought Santa just had the workshop with the wood and these things." And I was like, "Oh yeah, 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 of course. That's, I mean, he built some stuff, but with Legos, he just works directly with Amazon." And Ezra was like, "All right, good to go," right? So that was information that like clearly contradicted what he knew about the world. And instead of, you know, taking that new information and questioning your deeply held beliefs, you just like smash it all together. And again, this is, you know, that cognitive dissonance is like a really robust idea in psychology. It's not just kids that do it, but we're all doing a version of that same thing where we take that new information and just kind of mash it into our existing mental model instead of seeing how it might fundamentally take things away from or change our existing mental models.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to know, this is a fun question for me to ask. As you were writing the book, was it kind of strange to decide, what am I going to keep in this book about subtraction?
Yeah. Oh, it was horrible. Yeah. It could be better if it was shorter. I know it. And I think there's a file somewhere with all the excerpts that are never going to see the light of day, but that was like kind of helpful in getting rid of things. You must know this from doing the podcast, right? I mean, it's the most important thing is editing, but yeah. It's also incredibly, incredibly hard. Yeah. So that's one thing that I feel like I'm getting, continue to get better and better at in my writing it definitely was ironic. It's like, here's this thing, subtraction, and you know, it's an idea that can be articulated relatively quickly, the basic idea, but then like writing a book to kind of pull apart all the permutations of it. And
Okay, well, just one of my final questions for you: are you working on anything else right now, anything connected to this book?
Yeah, I have another book it'll be out this time next year. It's about how our surroundings make our psychology and how to make surroundings that like meet our psychological needs, which I actually think there's a huge overlap with minimalism, because the same thing with our surroundings is that we think that, okay, it's going to be these things that matter, right? It's because our surroundings are so physical. But really what matters is like how they give us agency, competence, and connection. And so anyway, I still need to work on the elevator pitch for that book. But I'm excited about it.
That is interesting because in minimalism and stripping away, I'm sure you've seen this on social media or online, but just looking to the way that the architecture in Europe versus our modern design, and it's stripping away, but also to me, I'm like, that isn't engaging or pleasant for the eye. I mean, obviously I try to live a minimalist lifestyle with fewer things that make sense to me in my life. But I mean, design wise, I'm very anti the whole just fine lines. That's not for me necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there. And I think so much of that is obviously personal preference, right? And, you know, if it's not,
yeah,
I think the thing you want to avoid is when you like think you're going to prefer something that you don't. So if you want ornate design and then you get it, then great. But it's less about, I think the fine lines are one thing, but it's like, this does seem like the thing that we like are things that look like the natural world, right? And the natural world is very complex, right? A pine tree doesn't have like fine lines, and it's more like the fractals, right? It's like there's these underlying patterns there, but you can't even really notice them unless you analyze it deeply. So it's very complicated. Yeah.
Yes. Personal preference for sure. All right. Well, where can listeners connect with you? And by the way, I would love to have you back to talk about that book, because I do think that'll be fascinating research of the brain and people's motivations for, I guess, the why behind their design of spaces. So I'm curious to have you back with that conversation.
But, yeah, that would be really fun.
Yeah. But where can listeners find you, connect with you online, grab a copy of this book?
Well, the book's everywhere, including your library, hopefully. And then my parents gave me a good Google name, so it's just LeidyKlotz.com. I try to put things on my website. I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm really not very active on social media. But that's where you can find me and find what I'm up to.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, I ask every guest this last question here, and it is, what does it look like to you to live a life with clear intentions?
I think it goes back to the values, understanding what your own, what your values are, and continuing to reassess your values. I think when people will ask me, hey, what should we subtract? I say, I don't know. That's up to you. And so often it's because we don't have clarity on what it is that is most important to us. And when you have that clarity, then you can make all these decisions, including what to subtract, what to add, you know, everything comes from that. So I think it's just getting back to that basic thing, which sounds very simple, but it's, I don't know, it takes yeah, time and thought.
I want to ask you, sorry, again, a personal question. I might throw it back at the beginning. Are you married?
Yeah.
Okay. What does your wife think about subtraction? Do you help her subtract? Does she like this lifestyle? Is she subtracting her wardrobe? What does it look like?
I don't think, we aren't minimalists. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't call ourselves minimalists. She definitely gets more joy out of material things than I do, but not in a unhealthy way, just in a different place, mm-hmm, with that. She's read the book, though, so I don't know.
Well, I guess it was kind of going back to my question of, what is this research? How has this research affected your life and the things that you do? And like with your relationships, yeah, with your parenting, with your work-life balance.
My wife would say that I was like this already. The things that have changed since the book are kind of like in my brain and not affecting her, the decoration of her living room or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just curious there. What was I going to say about that? Oh, that's partially why I shifted to clear intentions, because I don't think anyone can look at the number of sweaters that I own and consider me to be a full minimalist. I'm at the Project 333 Courtney Carver, who only has 33 items in her wardrobe. It's not for me. I like clothes too much. So
yeah, I think that it's all about knowing what you like and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why your book did speak to me in the sense of, what are we subtracting to cultivate that life of intention? And I feel like we're very aligned with that. And it sounds like the research is aligned as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this conversation.
Thanks, Diane. I appreciate it.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guests, including links or resources related to everything discussed today, check out the show notes in your podcast window. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends or on social media is so helpful and will encourage others as they set out to pursue a life with clear intentions.
This Mother's Day, skip the flowers that fade and give her something she'll actually carry every day. That's She's Birdie. Birdie 3.0 is a personal safety alarm designed to help her move through the world with confidence. So she doesn't have to think twice about the parking garage or whether it's too late to go for a walk. It clips right onto her keys, looks like a simple charm. And with one pull, it triggers a loud alarm that gets attention instantly. No aiming, no second guessing, just one pull. It's simple, it's discreet, and it's something she'll actually use. This is the kind of gift that says, I want you safe, wherever you go. Right now, you can save up to 30% on Birdie products. Go to shesbirdie.com, that's shesbirdie.com, and get yours today.
Donatos has been part of my life for a long time, and fun fact, it was my very first job when I was 15. I still remember those shifts, learning how everything worked, and honestly just loving the environment, and of course, the pizza. So it's kind of surreal now that all of these years later, it's become our family's go-to for pizza. And in this season of life with kids and full days, I just really value things that are easy and most importantly, consistent. And that's Donatos for us. I know when we order it, it's going to be good, everyone's going to be happy, and dinner just feels taken care of. Lately, we've been loving their $5 Pizza Pals menu. So when you order a large pizza, you can add on all of these $5 items, subs, wings, salads, even desserts. So I can mix and match depending on what everyone's in the mood for. It just makes dinner feel simple, a little more fun, and honestly, those are the kind of rhythms I'm always trying to create in our home. Donatos, gotta love more.